This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
All right. Inside the 9 p.m. hour on the Fan in New York, dial 888-808-1019 if you would like to talk to me about sports. Spoiler alert, I'm going to keep it right there. NFL, MLB, NBA. Joining us in about 10 minutes will be Christian Winfield to talk about your Knicks. I'm in here watching the Rangers now because I was looking online. I'm like, oh, them boys fighting. They scrapping a little bit. I see BR Open Ice said, just the aura of Matt Rempe and Tom Wilson chirping each other is causing the rest of the guys on the ice to want to drop the gloves. So now they got my attention. It's 2-1 Rangers, like you just heard, Marco, with the update, about 5 minutes left in the second period. Let's get back to the phones. Before we were going to break, I was talking about Shedeur Sanders. And it's just crazy the winding road that we go on from, you know, the Giants having the number one overall pick. Yeah, they're fighting again. Yeah. You got to love hockey. You know, it's like there are so many people that are like, you got to take the fighting out of the sport. And then hockey fans are like, no, you're not taking it. And all these people that are on the ice, they got their phones out. They're filming because you want to see these guys scrap. It's just human instinct. Like, hey, if these are the tough guys and they're all down and they all know that it could come to fisticuffs, let them rock. Anyway, you know, we were talking about Shedeur Sanders, and I'm thinking about the winding road from, you know, the Giants having the number one pick and needing a quarterback and knowing they need a quarterback. You're watching Tim Boyle take snaps this year. Drew Locke, you know, they move on from Daniel Jones. It's just the writing is on the wall. Last year, they missed out on Jaden Daniels and Drake May, and they did not select Michael Penix Jr. They didn't select Bo Nix. So no matter what, for years, we're going to look at those guys' careers and say what could have been. We thought that they might take J.J. McCarthy last year. They didn't. So here we are, and, you know, you remember seeing the red spikes that Shedeur Sanders had with an NY logo on him. He never wore them. Again, I've heard multiple hosts on this station say that he wore them in the bowl game. No, if you watch the bowl game, he had on black and white cleats. He couldn't wear them. I've never seen them on his feet. And he, on his podcast, said he doesn't know who even took that picture. Somebody happened to be in their locker room and saw those cleats by his locker, where his dad came out and said he's got a bunch of different style cleats and color cleats. He's got Raiders cleats. He's got Titan colors cleats. Like, but, you know, it was him signaling in a way, Giants, wanting to be on the Giants. And then when you think about Malik Nabers and him during the Heisman weekend meeting up, I don't even know where they were in New York, but, like, come on, you got a number one wide receiver and potentially a top quarterback in the next draft in New York City throwing a football on the street. It's just signaling, like, hey, you know, these guys know each other. There might be something there. And now, you know, the season ends, and he did not end on a good note in that game against BYU. But at least he played in the bowl game for his teammates. And he goes to the Shrine Bowl, where he's supposed to play in the Shrine Bowl, and he doesn't play. Because at this point, it could only hurt his draft status to play and not do well. I think his brother hurt his draft status there. His brother Shiloh went there, and I wasn't physically there, but the internet now is so powerful. Just a couple clips of you getting burnt or cooked or falling down or not being able to cover, not being able to tackle. The internet says Shiloh's doing terrible. He didn't even get an invite to the combine. His older brother Shiloh, who plays safety, that went to South Carolina and then went to Colorado and followed him. Well, went to Jackson State and then followed him to Colorado as well. So, you know, Shador talks to scouts and different teams at the Shrine Bowl. Then he loses his cell phone that he gave the number out to. And I'm sure, you know, he's a rapper. His latest song, he talks about, you know, liking a girl but not being able to date her. We might have to cue up Shador Sanders' latest single. We need a replacement for Candelita. Shador Sanders right here, come to the city, be the next rock star on a New York team. But that's not a good look when you go to the combine and, you know, there are scouts and people that are reaching out to you and you're not able to get back to them. On his podcast, he said I asked my mom to, you know, look in the house for it. No, young man, you got to find that phone. But maybe that was intentional. Maybe he gave a number out. Maybe he knows where he wants to go. Maybe Dion knows where he wants to go. Maybe they have a team that said, hey, we're not trading. We're not passing up. If you're there, we're going to take you. You're not going to drop. And I think that's where we are in this whole winding road of Shador Sanders and if he's going to be the Giants pick. I honestly don't think the Giants are going to pick him. I think it's too risky. I think they're going to try and trade up and take Cam Ward. But I also do have a theory that, like, if he's there at three, it's going to be hard to pass up on him. But it's also going to be hard to pass up on a Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter. Or, you know, it might be hard to, you know, pass up on the prospect of trading back and getting another pick. You're getting other picks. They need a lot of help on this team. 888-808-1019. Rob is in Queens on the fan. Go for it, Rob.
Yes, I believe the Giants should concentrate more on the offensive line and make a pick of quarterback later or earlier in the second round. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk around Jackson Dart. And I knew Jackson Dart was going to be like the Will Levis of this year. You know, he had a good bowl game. He had a good combine. And now, you know, there are people that have him going to I saw a mock draft today that has Shador Sanders at one going to the Titans, Cam Ward at two going to the Browns, and then the Giants taking Jackson Dart at three. I think that's too high to draft this kid, but it's a quarterback-driven league. It wouldn't be crazy if that actually went down. But I think that they should take the best available player or trade back. And there might not be that much of a drop-off between a Shador Sanders and a Jackson Dart.
You have to protect the quarterback. You need a good offensive line. You can always get a quarterback in a later round.
And there's a few that are trending up. Kyle McCord, Tyler Shuck, even Quinn Ewers had a decent showing. Like, you might not get, and what they're saying about this draft anyway is that these two quarterbacks aren't generational talents. They aren't franchise changers. They could be good quarterbacks in the NFL, but they're not the prospects that we've seen in recent years. So if that's the case, and like you're saying, you need an offensive line. You got to build from into the inside out. They've missed on Evan Neal. The book is still out on John Michael Schmitz. But, like, they have to get that offensive line together. And I think Jermaine Illuminor has been kind of speaking with his chest online about, you know, they feel confident that they're going to be better next year with Andrew Thomas back. But, yeah, nobody can succeed behind a faulty offensive line. And it seems like every year we're talking about the Giants' offensive line and them having 10 different combinations of offensive lines.
And the defense they need to concentrate on.
Yeah, I was reading some stuff about Bobby Okereke today.
Right.
I just don't know. They have a lot of needs in this upcoming draft that they need to address, but none bigger than drafting a quarterback. Whether they do it with their first pick or their second pick, they have two picks in the top 34. You got to get a quarterback with one of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Rob. 888-808-1019. We're going to take a break right now. Coming up next is my guy, Christian Winfield, who covers the New York Knicks and will talk to us about the team, about the state of the team, about, you know, individual players and what we're thinking about this team and with the coach and, you know, where we think we're headed here in March going into April ahead of another playoffs. Keith McPherson on the fan, 888-808-1019 if you'd like to dial up and be on hold for right after the interview. All my calls are clear. Christian Winfield coming up next to talk Knicks. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this. Oh, yeah. Joining us right now, K-Dub, Chris Splash on Twitter, Christian Winfield covering your New York Knicks for the New York Daily News. Chris, you there?
What's going on, brother? Thank you so much for having me, man. How you holding up?
Of course, it's been too long. I was like, I forget what I even did where I was like, yo, I meant to hit Christian to see if he could come back on the show. Sorry, I'm out of breath. I just was doing push-ups in the break. And I know you do your gym activity as well.
I just got back from the gym, man. I did 231 pull-ups. Not even going to hold you.
Yo, you're like that in the gym and in the kitchen. I've noticed the progress over the years. I was just talking to Dexter Henry in here about how, you know, I used to see you in Brooklyn covering the Nets. And we'll start there, right? Going from the Nets to the Knicks. The main conversation that folks are having is about that trade. You know, the Knicks and Nets don't do too much business, but the trade of Mikal Bridges. There are a lot of Knicks fans that are having buyer's remorse. There's a lot of Nets fans that are kind of laughing. And, you know, we're just seeing a different player in the last 3 years. I feel like we're seeing three different versions of Mikal Bridges. What are your thoughts? A lot of people are asking, what's wrong? What is it? Is it too much pressure? Is it adjusting to the new team? The guys that he's playing with? You know, he's an Iron Man. Is he playing too much? Does he need a rest? Like, what is it? And I did have a caller specifically ask if you had any insight from the locker room, you interviewing him. Just let's start with Mikal Bridges and your thoughts on the transition from Brooklyn to the Knicks and what we're seeing from him.
Sure, that's a great place to start. You know, I think first and foremost, when you hear five draft picks traded for any player, you automatically think superstar. You think Kevin Durant. You think, I mean, Luka. Imagine that. Luka got moved in a deal and only one draft pick was included from the Lakers. And people are like, how is that possible? When you set the bar with the number of draft picks that the Knicks gave up to get Mikal Bridges, there's just a certain expectation that comes with that, right? And traditionally, that's a superstar level expectation. And to be quite frank, when we look at what we've seen from Mikal Bridges this year, it's been an up and down season. But at the same time, the role that he's been asked to play here is definitely different than he's been asked in previous stops in his career. When you think about how Tom Thibodeau is using him to defend the point of attack every single game. Now, the point of attack in 2025 right now is you're dealing with a star player every night who can get 25.7 assists, and you're running through screens, 2-3 screens every possession. So you're talking about a guy who's worn down on the defensive end, and then on the other side, you're asking him to be, you know, ideally the third scoring option, right? So it's a different role than he's seen. And as a result, it's been up and down, inconsistent season for him, right? What we know, what we're getting from Mikal Bridges every night is he's going to guard the opposing team's most dynamic perimeter player, right? He's, you know, Tibbs is putting him on Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. He's putting him on Trae Young, Steph Curry, everybody, right? And you know you're going to get that. On the other side of the floor, though, right, this is where it's you're looking at this, right? Like last night, for example, against the Warriors, it's OG Anunoby who has 29 points, and Mikal Bridges gives you 15, 7 to 15 shooting, struggling from behind the arc. And that's what Knicks fans and everybody that's looking at these games right now is looking for from him in terms of consistency scoring the ball. Other than that, you know, it's been a seamless fit for him as we knew it would be in terms of Jalen Brunson and Josh Harden, just the fit in terms of personalities on this roster. Mikal's a great guy, locker room. He's always around. Even when games don't go his way, you know, he's going to stand there and he's going to answer questions and answer the difficult questions, right? He's getting asked to guard a lot of he's got to guard Anthony Edwards one night, Trae Young the next night, Steph Curry. In a couple of days, he's going to have to guard. Probably he's going to see LeBron or Luka against the Lakers, right? And then after that, he's going to have to see Steph again. It's every night he's going to be put up against one of the premier players. That being said, that's what this team brought him here to do, and they also brought him here to contribute on the offensive end as well. And right now, I think what we're seeing is a guy who's still trying to find his way on the offensive end. But we've seen him adjust on the defensive end in terms of him just understanding that every night he's going to have to guard someone who's capable of going for 30 and 10, maybe get a triple-double. And he's got to – we've seen him come up with some big blocks, some big defensive stops. He got to stop on Ja Morant to send the game to OT. I mean, he's been finding his way. Now it's just a matter of, is he going to be able to be that scoring punch that this team needs? Because we know that the Knicks are going to run the offense through Jalen Brunson and then Cat as well. Cat, we're going to get into Cat as well and what he's done offensively. But when the ball has to move from Jalen to Cat to somebody else, sometimes it's OG, sometimes it's Mikhail. The Knicks are going to need Mikhail to deliver in some of those moments if they're going to be able to get past the second round this season.
See, that's why I have you on, Christian. You just gave me a different perspective, a different way to look at Mikhail Bridges and his situation, where I actually have some empathy. I actually have some compassion for the guy. Like, he's been asked to do a lot, and it's a tough job to do. And most guys thrown in that position would not be surviving the way that he's been able to survive. I think it's just going to take some more time and involving, and you know, it's like there's a lot of pressure on the guy, but it's not just pressure. There's a lot of like real work that he's got to do. It's a lot for this first year, and you know, this is the thing with the Knicks. Like, this is the first year of this team. I know everybody's talking Eastern Conference Finals, but you know, I've been pretty open about like, hey, I don't think that this team can gel that quickly. I don't think that this team can come together that quickly. So let's talk about Cat, right? That's the other piece. You have Mikhail Bridges last summer, and then right before the season gets going, you have to make a move for a big, so you get Karl Anthony Towns. I'm always rooting for Karl Anthony Towns as a Jersey guy. Right now, I'm praying for him and his situation. Just, you know, he's gone through a lot with the loss of his mother. Now he's dealing with something with his girl, and, you know, he was away from personal reasons. But, you know, when the Knicks were rolling, and there's so many people that point to their record, right? When they had their, what, 9-game win streak, when they had, you know, the early part of the season that they were playing really well and Karl Anthony Towns was balling, where people were saying all-star, MVP, like, he became the identity of the team. This was the new-look team this year. It wasn't Brunson dropping 40. It was this guy going out there. So he's so much of the identity of the Knicks. They obviously need him back. Mitchell Robinson is back, but they need him back, and they need him to ball. What do you expect from Karl Anthony Towns coming back from the personal issues and being able to lead the way the rest of the way if they're going to compete in the Eastern Conference?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, Cat's not listed on the injury report, right? So we would presume that he's going to be playing and starting. And, you know, one thing that I'm really looking forward to seeing now is how Cat is going to mesh with Mitchell Robinson. It's something we have yet to see in the games that he and Mitch have been playing since Mitch came back, because Tibbs staggered them, right? Part of that is because you lose Ariel Hakporti to a torn meniscus at the worst time. Just when you think you're getting center depth, you got a guy who you traded Jericho Sims away to create a roster spot for. And shout outs to Ariel Hakporti for being able to carve that role. Just a terrible blow. So now you kind of got to manage the center rotation. You got Precious as well. But getting back to Cat, I mean, what I want to see from him is how he is able to impact the game on the floor in minutes where Mitchell Robinson's on the floor with him, because the Timberwolves were able to have extreme success, especially on defensive end. We're talking about a top three, top five defensive team for the time that Cat and Rudy Gobert shared the floor together. Now, Rudy Gobert is a four-time defensive player of the year. Mitch doesn't have those accolades, but he is a guy who can protect the paint. He is a guy who is dominant on the offensive glass. And he's a guy who also gives you that vertical lob threat, right? That's something that we haven't really seen recently that I think we're going to start seeing, that pick and roll. When Mitch goes down the roll, and when he rolls down the paint and he makes the defense collapse, that doesn't just only open up the lob threat for him. That also creates space for open shooters. So we're going to see another level of this Knicks offense coming in these weeks to come. But as far as we see with Cat, I mean, we have to talk about the injuries, right? He's been working through a thumb. I think the thumb might be a thing of the past, but it's something that he said he's going to have to work through. He's also dealing with a knee, right? He had both knees. He had the knee soreness in one knee, and then he had a weird situation where he landed awkwardly on the other one. So he's going to have to be, you know, on workload management, so to speak. But at the same time, you're talking about a guy who's come here and just completely changed the way this team has played on the offensive end of the floor. When you consider a guy who's shooting 40%+ from downtown, who's able to put it on the floor and then get to the rim, was also an underrated passer. People don't realize. Now, sometimes his passes get a little crazy, right? Sometimes he's trying to throw no-look passes when he could just throw a bounce pass. We got to call him out on those. But for the most part, he's been a transformative presence for the Knicks. Now it's just a matter of the defensive end, right? And the Knicks have not seen, in terms of paint defense, they're in the bottom 10 in terms of opponent point scoring in the paint. And then that also trickles out to three-point defense, because once a team is able to get to the rim, and you got to come help. Now there's an open shooter. The Knicks are the worst in the league in terms of opponent three-point efficiency. So these are areas that they're hoping that Mitchell Robinson can help clean up just by being that anchor. But we know what Cat brings on the offensive end of the floor. He's going to be able to space the floor. He's a guy that teams have to send a double to. He's a guy that can get to the rim. It's just a matter of the Knicks figuring out this two big man lineup. At the beginning of the season, Tom Thibodeau just said it not too long ago. The Knicks were penciling in Mitchell Robinson as their starting center right next to Karl Anthony Towns, right? So they've had this idea in their mind for some time, but now that he's back, and Mitch is also working through a minutes restriction right now, so it hasn't really been the time on the floor, especially since Cat missed the last game. But that the way that they're able to play those two together could be what they need to get over the hump against a team like Cleveland or against a team like Boston, because something that we're seeing consistently in a lot of these losses is the lack of size, and they haven't had a seven-footer on the floor like Mitch all season. So I'm interested to see how it looks. They're going to have to work through some kinks for sure, but if they can figure that combination out, it could save their season for sure.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that they can't compete, that they can't advance. Every season we see somebody get hurt from a contender. Every season we see it go not the way on paper that it's supposed to go. Maybe this will be the year that they can do that, but they got to stay healthy. My next question is about Josh Hart. You know, a two-part question.
Yeah.
You know, Josh Hart is he plays with heart. He's one of the tougher players. He's a minutes guy. He's a glue guy. He's been slightly different this year. Not as much of a double-double machine, triple-double machine, not shooting as many open threes. So the two-part question is, you know, what has changed? Josh Hart this year, what's changed with him? And then also, there's a lot of people that talk about what's changed from last year to this year with the toughness. I still look at Josh Hart as one of the, you know, tough guys, but obviously you lose kind of that grittiness that Dante DiVincenzo had, and then obviously that bulldog mentality that Randall had. And when you look at Mikal Bridges and when you look at Karl Anthony Towns, people don't necessarily look at them as, you know, those tough, gritty type of players. So talk to me about Josh Hart, and then talk to me about the, like, toughness and mentality of this team.
Josh Hart is amazing. I mean, this is a guy who eats Mike and Ike's before every game and goes out there and plays like he's on a sugar rush, like literally just throwing his body around, crashing the glass, 6'4", playing like he's 6'8". I believe there was a certain point in the season. It's probably not the same now because he's missed a few games, and he's kind of been, you know, on a we'll call it a slump of sorts, just in terms of what he's been doing. There was a point in the season where he was leading all players that were shorter than 6'10" in rebounds per game. Like, it doesn't make sense when you just consider his height, but that just shows you what type of heart he has. He's going out there and he's just outwilling guys to the rim and getting these rebounds. And then on top of that, he's pushing the ball in transition, going coast to coast. He's a triple double threat out there, because once he's getting to the rim, he's over there also looking for the pass. I mean, this is a guy who's been able to impact the game, but also now you have to consider Mitchell Robinson coming back changes rotations, right? There's a world where Tibbs decides to start Mitchell Robinson alongside Karl Anthony Towns, which means one of the wings have to go to the bench, right? And there was a point earlier in the season where the Knicks were trying to figure out stuff where Josh Hart floated the idea of coming off the bench because he was in a little slump offensively. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen now. I'm not even saying that there's going to be a starting lineup shift. But if the Knicks are going to play two bigs on the floor, they've got some rotation tinkering to do. And when you consider OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges are your wing stoppers, and Jalen Brunson is Jalen Brunson, you know, Josh Hart seems like the guy who, if you're going to go with two bigs, is then going to be playing with some of the second unit players. Now, in terms of just what he's been able to do this season, this is a guy, I don't know that the Knicks have a 40-21 record right now if you don't have Josh Hart on the floor with them. And every time you ask an opposing coach about him, they all say the same thing. He's relentless. He's a guy where you know what you're getting from him on a nightly basis. Now it's just a matter of managing his body, because for the longest portion of the season, him and Mikal Bridges were 1-2 in minutes per game, right? And then he has a knee situation that comes up that's pretty much going to need monitoring all season long. And the Knicks definitely need him and everybody else, obviously, but they need Josh Hart healthy and ready to go for April and beyond, right? So if that means they have to manage his workload at this point in the season, and then when you get towards April in those last few games, then you start to ramp him up in terms of minutes played, that's one thing. But he's a guy where he's going to go out there and just compete, man. This team would not be where it is if it wasn't for him. So when you talk about offensively and what he's been able to do in turning down three-point shots, I mean, he's somebody who, you know, and I asked him about this last season, sometimes he'll turn down an open shot if he thinks there's a better shot out there on the floor. And sometimes he might have a wide open shot that he should be shooting and he doesn't. But in terms of making the right play, he's a guy that's going to go out there and do that most of the time. And in terms of just putting his body out there on the floor for his team, you're going to get that every single night for him. I stand on that. This team would not have a 48-21 record without Josh Hart.
Yeah. Do you think the team lacks toughness? Do you think that they're getting punked? They're getting bullied at times by some of these bigger, stronger, better teams?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, and I forgot you included that in the first question. That comes with a lack of size, I believe, right? And I think Mitch helps address that. If a team could just get to the rim against you over and over again and you have no paint presence, what are you going to be able to do about that, right? A lot of that falls on not having a roster where you can have someone protect the paint. I think it was the first game of the season where the Celtics had someone drive to the rim and then slap the backboard. If you got someone slapping the backboard on you, it's a problem, right? But if you can't protect the rim, you know, a lot of that lies in that. And then on top of that, just I think the size has also been a thing. When you talk about, like, imagine this, Cleveland went and got DeAndre Hunter, and that's just another 6'7" wing that can just go out there and defend multiple positions. The Knicks don't necessarily have that beyond Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby. Josh Hart, who we're saying is this, you know, heart of the team and rebounding machine, is 6'4". And then when you look at the Knicks three-guard lineup of Landry Shamet, Deuce McBride, and Cam Payne, that's 6'4" and under, right? Jalen Brunson, obviously, under 6'4" as well. So you've got a size deficit against a lot of these teams. Precious Achiuwa right now, and Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns, aside from your two wings, those are your only guys who are, you know, 6'6", we'll call it, or taller on the roster. That's why I was a big fan of the Marjon Beauchamp signing. I thought that just the way he profiles as a player who's 6'7", about 200 pounds. He knows his role in this league. He said it before. I did some research on his interviews. He knows he needs to be a defender to have a role in this league. And that's music to Tom Thibodeau's ears, because that's also a guy that can shoot the three. If you're telling me you now have a 6'7" guy who's on the roster, who's going to defend multiple positions and shoot open threes, sign me up. That's exactly what this team needs. I don't know if he's going to get minutes. He's on a two-way contract. I don't even know if Tibbs is considering putting him out there on the floor. He was in the locker room last night before the game. He didn't play, obviously. Maybe we see him on this West Coast road trip. I don't know. But he's a guy that I think also can add a little bit of size and just defensive versatility. And in terms of toughness, yeah, you lost Dante DiVincenzo and you lost Julius Randle. And those are obviously tough guys, right? Yeah, Dante DiVincenzo is a guy who's going to go out there and not back down. And Julius Randle is the same. But I think you can replicate some of that if you can just protect the paint and add some size to your roster. And then you also got, you know, P.J. Tucker is a guy who's out there. You kind of need that enforcer type of mindset, that type of guy who's just willing to get in someone's face for no reason. I don't know if the Knicks would be interested in going to get him. But in terms of their roster, I think Mitchell Robinson coming back helps some of that toughness, because he's going to protect the paint and prevent guys from getting to the rim. And then from there, we got to see who wants it more, right? We were talking about the last leg of the season. Everybody's got to be tough if they want to get to the conference finals and to the finals. And we've said this before. This is a team where you're coming off of two second round playoff exits, and then you have this crazy offseason where you trade 5 draft picks and you trade Julius Randle, you trade Dante DiVincenzo, you get Cat, you get Mikal Bridges. That's why there's pressure right now, because you do all that and you have another second round exit. That's a tough pill to swallow. But at the same time, if you look at who you have to go through in terms of Boston and Cleveland, and you haven't really played well against these teams at all, you kind of got to be realistic about maybe what your odds are. But to your point earlier, Cleveland has not proven anything in the playoffs just yet, right? So really, you're looking at Boston, but at this rate, you're seeing Boston in the second round. So it's tough.
We're on the phone right now with Christian Winfield. Christian covers the New York Knicks for the New York Daily News. Yeah, the playoffs are a different monster. We'll see what Cleveland does when the lights are brightest. And then again, I lean on history of Kyrie Irving or Kawhi Leonard or Joel Embiid, Trae Young, like, you know, just guys getting hurt. It just, you know, it happens every year. Somebody goes down on a contender and they're not there, and then their fate is altered. So a couple things for you before we let you go. You know, we're talking about Tibbs. We're talking about another potential second round exit. There was a quote that I put in my notes from Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr on if he chose to coach the Knicks instead of Golden State in 2014. He said, "I would have been fired within 2 years. I'd be doing television right now." It's a tough job. It's a tough gig. And if you have another year of a second round exit, we know the voices are going to get very loud around moving on from Tom Thibodeau and his style and his age. But ultimately, I just think that he's locked in with this team. I think, you know, with the guy's podcast, you're able to see the relationship that they have with him. What do you think about if, you know, ultimately this does end in a second round exit, what they're going to do at the head coach spot with this group?
You know, Tibbs is a guy who last season, you couldn't tell me that he wasn't coach of the year after you take the hand that he was dealt in terms of all the injuries and everybody that went down and the midseason trades that you had to make. And to come out of that with 50 wins in the Eastern Conference's second seed and then still have guys continue to go down in the playoffs and then run out of gas, really. That's what happened in Game 7 of that Eastern Conference second-round series against the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks, whoever was left standing, just ran out of gas against the Pacers. But had they been healthy, that would have been an Eastern Conference Finals team going toe-to-toe with the Boston Celtics, right? So what they were able to do last season is the reason why you signed Tom Thibodeau to a contract extension, right? And now you're in year one of this new look team and everyone's still trying to figure things out and you haven't had Mitchell Robinson all season and you've got guys in and out of the rotation due to injury. And despite every narrative there is out there, you can point to the Knicks being dead last in terms of 3-point percentage efficiency opponents. And you can point to them being bottom 10 in points in the paint. They're still 40-21 with the Eastern Conference's number 3 seed, right? And when you look at just teams all throughout the league, they're among the top, right? And you can still look at 0-7 against top teams that are, when you're talking about Oklahoma City and Boston and Cleveland, Knicks haven't played well against them, right? You call a spade. But when you also just look at...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is upon us. Rob Radford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every other team in the league, and when you look at teams that they're pretty evenly matched against, the Knicks have done what they're supposed to do. And on top of that, you've got this stretch coming up. I think this is an important stretch right now. You've got the Lakers who are hot. You got the Clippers the night after on the back-to-back. You got the Kings, you got the Trailblazers, and then you got the Warriors again. And the Warriors are on a tear since they got Jimmy Butler. This five-game stretch right now might show us who these Knicks are in terms of what their ceiling might look like this season. But in terms of Tom Thibodeau, he's a guy who I don't think they get here without the culture that he's been able to put in place, which is really simply just come here, do your job, put in the work every single day and be ready for when your number is called. A guy like Deuce McBride is able to step up and play minutes because of you know, the culture that Tom Thibodeau put in place here in part, right? And now you can also point at other things as well. And this is where things start to get tricky, right? There's always the conversation about minutes and the minutes police and workloads and all that. But at the end of the day, what Tom Thibodeau is going to do is prioritize that record. And that record is 40-21. So if you're telling me that the Knicks leave in the first round of the playoffs, maybe there's a conversation, right? Maybe there's, okay, it's the Detroit Pistons and that matchup goes left. And now you start, as an organization, you have to start answering questions, right? Maybe then there's a conversation. But in terms of going back to the second round and you draw Boston, the reigning champs, and it doesn't go your way, and you're talking about firing your head coach because you lost to the reigning champs, even though you had a pretty much a historic regular season in terms of what this team has been able to do without Mitchell Robinson all year. I don't know. It's a difficult question. This is New York City, right? This is the premier media market. This is, you know, prime time basketball. But at the same time, you look at the record and the wins that you see on the floor. There's a case to be made that without Tibbs, this team is not where they are right now. So it's tough. I think we still have to let the cards play. We still have to let these games go. I think what would help the case is if they could look the part in some of these games against Cleveland and Boston and OKC. There's a few more games against OKC, not against OKC, against Boston and against Cleveland in April. But in terms of what they've been able to accomplish, you sent two players to the All-Star game this season as starters. You know, you're up to a 40. You were 40-20 before you played Golden State last night. And even Steve Kerr was talking about that record as if that meant something, that you won two-thirds of your games. There's an argument to be made that this team is not this good without Tom Thibodeau. So it could go either way.
Yeah, he's responsible for a lot of the changes, the change in vibe and culture. I think back to, you know, losing to the Hawks in the second round in 2021, losing to the Heat in the second round in 2023, the Pacers in 2024. And like you said, if they end up losing here in 2025 to the Celtics, who are the defending champs, that might very well go back-to-back here. There's no shame in that. And then also, I think moving on from him would be premature because, like, this team needs more time to gel and to develop and to, you know, go through experiences with each other and be healthy for a longer stretch. And, you know, here comes a stretch up, you know, on the West Coast. What's your prediction? With these five games, I think they got to go 3-2. Lakers, Clippers, Kings, Trailblazers, Warriors. If you lose to the Lakers on the first one, even though we know Kat is back and whatever, you lose to the Lakers and Luka and LeBron and Reeves and them on the first one, okay. And then on the last one, you know, you got to go face the Warriors again in their building. If you lose to them, fine. But I think that they can rip off three wins between the Clippers, Kings, and Trailblazers out West. What do you think?
Well, funny story. I asked Steve Kerr about guarding Jalen Brunson, and he kind of predicted what was going to happen. He said, you know, when the Warriors came to Madison Square Garden last year, they kind of held Jalen Brunson in check. And then when he went back to Chase Center to face them on their own home court, he went for about 40. So we'll see what happens in terms of how that Warriors game unfolds. That's after 2 days of rest. I'm looking at the schedule right now. So they've got Portland on March 12th, and then you've got the Warriors on March 15th. So they'll have fresh legs for that game at Golden State. That game could go either way. I think we might look at the Knicks as having fresh legs and being able to steal that game on the road. In terms of that game against the Lakers, that's going to be a tough one in terms of just guarding Luka. How do you approach that? You got OG. You have to put OG on LeBron, and then you got your trusting Mikhail on Luka, and that's just going to be a nightmare matchup. So that could be a tough loss. But at the same time, this is a team that the last time they played the Lakers, the only reason they lost that Lakers game, in my opinion, is because OG Anunoby got hurt and had to leave the game. If OG Anunoby is on the floor for that game, I think that's a toss-up. They could steal that.
They didn't have Luka yet.
They didn't have Luka yet. You're right. But, yeah, pretty much they didn't have Luka yet. So we'll see what happens on that one. And then after that, have the second leg of a back-to-back to play the Clippers. I don't know who will be healthy or who will be on the floor, if Kawhi is going to play, what James Harden is going to look like in that game. But that's just still a tough call, second leg of a back-to-back on the road. Then you got Sacramento. Sacramento plays fast. They're going to look different because they don't have De'Aaron Fox. That could go. The Knicks will probably steal that game on the road. Portland is a game you would expect them to win. Even though Portland's been playing some good basketball recently, they can't sleep on that game. I'll call it now. I say the Warriors steal that game. I mean, the Knicks steal that game in Golden State on the road, March 15th. I say they win that game on the road. So we're looking at 3-2. We're looking at they win in Sacramento. I'm calling it 4-1. They win in L.A., Sacramento, Portland, and Golden State. They lose in L.A. I'm calling 4-1.
Hey, well, they need it. Chris, you're the man. Thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate you, bro.
My God, thank you for having me.
That's Christian Winfield. You can find him on Twitter at Chris Splash, KRISPLASHED. He covers the New York Knicks for the New York Daily News. This is Keith McPherson on the Fan. We got about a half hour until Antoine Staley joins me to talk Jets. If you'd like to get in any thoughts or takes or questions on the Knicks or on anybody else, whether it's Yankees talk, Mets, Jets, Giants, we're wide open for calls for the next half hour. Let's break it down. We'll be right back after this. Thanks for waiting. Thanks for holding. Thanks for listening. Whether you've been listening for the last couple hours or 5-10 minutes, Keith McPherson on the Fan. WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM, HD1 New York. Streaming on the free Odyssey app and Odyssey Sports Station. It's a tie game right now in the Garden. Did Ovechkin just score? 2-2. I think Ovechkin just scored. I missed that coming in from the break, but the camera's on him. So I'm guessing he just scored the goal to tie it. Here comes the replay off the faceoff. Who else? How many? Ovechkin's got to be like 10 goals away. Yeah, he's a dog. Anyway, I'm sure we'll talk some puck at some point, but everything's on the table. My main thread for tonight was just that last year is over. It's 2025. We keep wanting to reach back into last year for things with all of our teams, especially with the news today of, oh my God, Jose Iglesias signing a minor league deal with the San Diego Padres. The Mets, they said thanks for the memories, but we don't think you can do it again. We don't think lightning can strike twice. We don't think we can catch lightning in a bottle with you a second time, and we're not going to pay you. We're going to let our young guys shine. So let's get back to the phones at 888-808-1019. Devin is in Long Beach. Devin, you're on the Fan.
Thanks for having me. How you doing tonight?
Good, man.
So, yeah, I've been wondering about the Mets infield kind of for since the signs have slowed down, and last year was amazing, but this one was an easier pill to swallow because it's so abundant kind of there. Of Vientzo, Acuna Jr., Beatty, of course, Lindor, and Pete, you know. But I've been wondering for a while what maybe like a Beatty and Mauricio on the market, what's the highest that could maybe come back for something like that. And I hope I eat my words. I hope Beatty...
What are you looking to get?
Like, improve the team probably in pitching.
Another arm?
Go after pitching.
So you don't have to watch Griffin Canning starts?
Something to relieve that. Just like how high their value has maybe gotten at this point now. Because even, you know, Pena's 19 years old, but that's something really exciting for the future. And I don't know. It seems like we'll kind of have to make a decision on those two guys soon, and maybe they can bring back something big.
Thanks for the call, Devin. Ronnie Mauricio, not so much. Maybe Brett Beatty very soon. Maybe you need to know about Brett Beatty very soon, but it seems like they want him to be in the fold. It seems like, as we're talking about Jose Iglesias, with the injury news last week on Nick Madrigal, he's going to be somebody that breaks the camp with the team. And they've played him at second base, third base. I think he even was taking reps at first base when they thought Pete wasn't going to return. So Brett Beatty is the guy that you're going to see, whether he's a bench player. I think he's going to break camp with the team. He's hitting, and I don't think they're looking to trade him. I'm thinking they're looking to get value out of him. You can't send him away. Juan Soto bought him a nice new Chevy. I don't know what that was. Chevy Tahoe? I think it was a Tahoe. They said it was his dream car. I'm like, these guys are millionaires. They don't dream bigger than Chevy Tahoes. But what do I know, man? What do I know, man? I drive a car I don't even want. And I'm not going to throw them under the bus, the brand, the make. But any car dealerships out there, any car salesman out there, hit me up. I'm trying to get a better whip. I'm trying to get to something else. But then at the same time, I'm driving in today in the rain. I'm coming down Hudson Street. It's pouring. And a delivery driver on a bike, some of these guys... The audacity. This guy hit my mirror. My mirror bent. I'm like, bro, what the? I couldn't even chase him down. I'm in gridlock traffic. I'm like, bro, what's going on? Like, luckily I don't care about this car, but if I had a nicer car and you hit my mirror like that, I might have had to get out on foot and go get you. But, you know, this is New York.
The bike lane now, Keith, is now just a lane for motorized bikes to go faster than traffic.
No, let me make it clear. And I know what you're talking about because these guys be bugging out with these motorized Grubhub bikes.
The DoorDash driver's like, you're going across the street. You don't see him coming. And they shoot through at 95 miles an hour.
But bro, I was on the second lane in from the street. This guy came on his bike between the cars on the dotted line, hit my mirror where I'm sitting in the car listening to WFAN, the end of Evan and Tiki, and I just feel a doom, and my mirror gets pushed the other way, and I'm like, what the hell? The audacity of these guys. And, you know, these guys drive into the street. They look at you funny. You're in a car that weighs a ton. You are inside an enclosed vehicle. They look at you crazy when they're driving against traffic, driving in the middle of the street. Only in New York, man. There are all these delivery drivers out now. And, you know, now I'm rooting for for these bots. I'm not rooting for AI and some of this, you know, technology to take away jobs. But, man, send those little bots where they, you know, they put the delivery into the machine and that thing goes and rides. That thing is going to be a lot safer. I won't have to worry about my windshield or my rearview mirror getting hit by one of those things. Those things are going to abide by the traffic laws. They're going to stay on the sidewalk. They're going to get you your food safely and make sure that they get there safely. 888-808-1019. Can I sneak in a call before we break here? Okay, let me see which one I want to go to. This is a good one. Tony is up in Montreal. Welcome back, Tony. You're on the Fan.
Keith, I love talking to you, man. Listen, I don't know about that guy on the bike, man, but, you know, the old open the door trick usually sends him, as they say,
I didn't even see him coming.
Ass over tea kettle. As they say in Canada, ass over tea kettle.
I'm like, didn't that hurt? This guy hit my mirror. I'm like, he had to have felt that. But I guess, what's he going to do? He's not going to stop and apologize.
No, but you're a nice guy, man. Most of the guys would have shot him in New York. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, you,
I figured
he ripped your whip and then you pulled out something and scared the living daylights out. You know, I never know.
I've been into some fender benders. One day I was late actually getting here because some guy rammed into my car. Anyway, Tony, we got about a minute before we got a break. Go for it.
So basically, you know, all you guys are looking for quarterbacks, and Warren Moon came out of Canada, so did Doug Flutie, and we got a thing called the CFL. All the American baseball teams and have feeder systems, AAA ball, AA ball. You have the NBA with their B League or whatever they call it, and you got hockey with multiple American League teams. Why can't this NFL buy into Canada and create all that good football and use that as a feeder system? And you'd have all kinds of quarterbacks. You guys, I'm telling you, in Canada, there's three downs, so they got to throw the ball. All these guys are ex-Division I guys that can throw the ball. You could have played in this league, Keith, when you gave it up.
I should have tried to get with the Argonauts or something. Thanks for the call, Tony. I don't think there's as many. There used to be. And there used to be players from the NFL go to the CFL. I don't think there's any that really do it anymore. Also, they have like a USFL, the UFL here where guys are signing. I think it's just a difference in the field size, it's different in the size of the ball. Like you said, the number of downs. It is a different game, CFL to NFL.